What is up, Star Wars Rebels fans? Welcome to the Star Wars Rebels After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. Season 3, episode 11? 9? 10? It's one of those, but the title of it is definitely Visions and Voices. We'll be breaking down the episode and talking about our thoughts and predictions for the second half of this season right after the break.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
What's up, guys?
What the heck was this episode?
This is super interesting because we all seem to be a little divided on today's episode. Welcome once again, guys, to the Star Wars Rebels After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. Again, if you are watching us on YouTube, remember you can also check us out on iTunes. So you should go over there, subscribe. Give us a listen. You can take us on the go. Leave us a review. We actually have 3 new iTunes reviews for this week.
Dang.
And so, you know, if you leave us an iTunes review, we'll give you a shout out on the show because we like it when you guys say nice things about us. But also, if you are listening on iTunes, remember you can also tune in live at 6 o'clock p.m. Pacific time on Tuesday nights. As of right now, we'll see what happens when we come back for the second half of season 3 here. But it's always really fun to get to interact with all of you guys in the live chat, which we are following along with, as well as that Twitter hashtag ABTVRebels, which is my favorite AfterBuzz hashtag in existence. Allow me to introduce my wonderful panel of women tonight. Katie Cullen.
Hi, all my buddies. You can find me on Twitter at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T.
Joelle Monique.
Hey guys, I'm Joelle Monique. You can find me everywhere on the internet at Joelle Monique and every week at blackgirlnerds.com.
Megan has a new very important mission in life and is unfortunately unable to join us this evening, but she'll be back. Don't worry. She's not
gone
forever.
She's all finding the Darksaber.
Yeah, she's and she is the Manguin, like penguin with an M. And I'm Emma Fife. I can be found all over the internet wherever Emma Fifes are sold at my name, Emma Fife. So, this is the mid-season finale for season 3.
Yes.
And I personally really enjoyed this episode.
I thought it was okay.
Joel thought it was okay, and Katie
not
basically didn't like
it.
Which is...
I didn't say, well, I didn't like it. I'm like...
She's like, whoa, don't set the fans after me.
Yeah, on a scale of 1 to 10, it's a 5.
Oh, that's a low score. That's failing.
Ooh, yikes. See, I think I'd go more like a not... Like, it wasn't like, oh my god, this is the perfect episode, but... I'd give it a solid 8.5, 9-ish.
And see, I'd go a little lower, really right in the middle here.
Yeah.
I'd give it a solid 6, because, like, maybe 7.5. It set us on a good course for the next second half of the season, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
It's clear we're going to be doing more Maul, some history lessons, which are kind of cool for me. I love Star Wars history or whatever. But the previous episode was so good and kind of terrifying to me that coming into this episode, I was like... Oh, is that it?
See,
and Maul showed up and wasn't as scary, and I'm like... Eh.
See, I understand your point of view there, Joelle. Like, I feel like, actually, if they had swapped these two, that I agree with you that the last episode would have been a better mid-season finale, even though there's a lot of, like, big implications in this episode that are very exciting for the future, and also very exciting for anybody who is really steeped in Star Wars lore, particularly in Clone Wars, because there were a lot of references to Clone Wars in this episode.
Yeah. And that was honestly part of my issue with it. And I got the assigned reading. I watched the episodes of Clone Wars that were relevant to this episode. So I did do the homework assigned by our lovely lead host here. I did the thing. Even with context, looking at it from someone who didn't watch all of Clone Wars, who didn't go through all of that, and watching this episode, the people who are just watching Rebels... we'll find this episode fairly inaccessible.
It is.
Like, there are... Yeah, there's... If you don't know Maul's backstory, if you don't know a lot of what happened in the Clone Wars, there's so much in this episode that comes right the heck out of nowhere. What is this mysterious sword that Sabine might know about? And where the heck did we get dark magic from? I don't think we've ever seen magic in any of the Star Wars movies. What the heck? There's just a bunch where it's very Clone Wars heavy, but most of the other Clone Wars stuff that we've had in this series has been introduced in some capacity. Here's this character. Here's where you've seen them before in a different series.
Right.
So, new people. These guys are clone troopers. This person's been a smuggler all through the war.
Right.
This,
I really feel like a pre-Vizsla history lesson would have fixed a lot of the issues. Yes.
I agree. I do agree with that. And I mean, they certainly reference pre-Vizsla quite a lot in regards to Sabine, because she is supposed to be...
Go to Wikipedia and get your lessons on it. Exactly. Like they're telling
yeah,
you
I know. Basically, they're like, if you don't know who pre-Vizsla is, you got to go find out, because that's obviously going to be very important. Now, to your point, Katie, about there never having been dark magic in a Star Wars film, that is true to an extent. However, the witch in Ewok's Battle for Endor been retconned into being a Sith witch, which is ultimately what the Night Sisters are.
Canon?
God bless you for knowing
you know,
that.
I'm not 100% sure if that's technically current, because basically, all right, so here's the deal with the Night Sisters. The Night Sisters started in some of the, what are now considered to be Legends novels, so, you know, the Expanded Universe stuff, and they were Sith witches.
Right.
And they sort of evolved. There were a number of characters that were kind of classified as that, and then ultimately they sort of changed and evolved to the point that they were introduced as being canon in Clone Wars as the Night Sisters. And Asajj Ventress, who was Count Dooku's apprentice assassin, was also one of the Night Sisters. And so she was the one who basically, like, pulled out Savage Press and was like, yo, man, you're gonna be, like, a great Sith. Also, like, your brother Darth Maul. But he doesn't know that he's related to Darth Maul until later. But anyway, that's a whole long story.
Also,
but,
the women enslaved the men, which is one of the reasons.
Oh, yeah. No. That planet, Dathomir, is super interesting, because it is. It's a matriarchal society. And it was always, even in, like, the Expanded Universe novels, it was introduced as being a matriarchal society. There were kind of a couple different ones that sort of got merged into what became Dathomir and the Night Sisters. So, it's, for me, it's like, I just, one of the things that I feel I've been sort of disappointed with in terms of the Star Wars films up to this point is that, you know, we have Captain Phasma, who's, like, sort of getting into that territory now, but we haven't really had great female villains.
Yeah.
And so, like, the Night Sisters and Mother Talzin, who is, you know, Darth Maul and Savage Opress's mother, is it's such an interesting storyline.
Mother Talzin is so dope, too. Like, she takes no shits. Like, she's an amazing fighter, and then her magic is so strong. And especially, not the episodes you watched, but there's a couple episodes prior where we meet Darth Maul's, like, baby brother. And those episodes, she's so evil, guys.
She's really evil.
She does not care. She will kill people. She will let them die in combat. Just to be like, who's the strongest?
Yeah.
It's so cool. And I was just talking about this today. We need more very cool lady villains that are not sexual villains.
But absolutely. Villains. Absolutely. Because she's not sexualized or objectified in any way whatsoever. And ultimately also has kind of a sad backstory in the regards that she was basically tricked into giving up Darth Maul to Darth Sidious to be his apprentice, and she thought she was going to get something out of it, and she really didn't. So, I mean, on the one hand, it's like,
she's still a villain.
Terrible that she was willing to give up her baby, but
she was going to get something in return, and the whole planet, and she's a ruler, and sometimes she makes difficult choices.
It's true. It's totally true. So for me, it was very exciting to see sort of the shadows of the Night Sisters in this episode, but I also totally understand that without having context for them, they might not make quite as much of an impact. Though I did really enjoy the fact that they were, like, tied to their magical altar.
Yeah. I thought that the whole cave aspects were cool. It was cool when we're walking in there, like, I know where we are. And I guess the tricking, like, the whole, like, Ezra having to figure something out on his own was kind of cool. But other than that, I was like, like, there were ghostly forms were kind of cool-looking, but they're just so evil-looking, typically.
Yeah.
And these were so cartoony ghosts that I was like, okay. That's how I felt about this whole episode. I'm like, all right. Like, okay, Maul's got a plan. Okay, we know we're looking for Obi-Wan. Like, okay. Like, the coolest thing was seeing, oh, Lord, now I can't remember her name. She's not governor. She's not queen of her planet. The mural that Maul has.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
The Duchess.
Duchess Satine.
We decided that last week. Yeah.
Yeah, Duchess Satine.
Yeah. Seeing Satine's portrait was really dope. I was like, oh, I miss you.
Yeah.
That was about the highlight of the show, which I think, you know, a portrait, and it's not really, should not be the highlight of the episode.
That is very true. But I will agree, again, it was nice to see that reference thrown in there. And especially because, you know, in regards to the Mandalorian history, with Satine being so different from the usual way of the Mandalorians, it was just, it was interesting. And I loved seeing the Darksaber come back. But I agree, mm-hmm. it's like, if you didn't have a reference for the Darksaber, you'd be like, well, I guess that's a cool-looking sword.
Sabine knows what it is. That's great. Is she getting... No, she's not going to explain it by the end. Boy, this ended really abruptly. Are we sure that was 22 minutes?
And see, the ending is exciting if you know what that scene is. It's
but
like,
that's the thing. If you have no context, as I would imagine a lot of kids who are watching
that's
this
fair.
Art, and a lot of people our age who missed Clone Wars and came into this, you come away from this episode like... Was this the episode that was written by the one person who had never seen a series before, but they tapped him to write an episode?
Right.
Every series has
and
one.
And who had worked on Clone Wars.
Yeah, without context, that's what this one seems like. It's just, it came straight out of left field, we did a really weird little thing, and then it went right back into left field. It's like, bye.
See,
that was our mid-season finale? See you in January?
It's interesting for me, and I would love to get chat to weigh in on this if they sort of have opinions on the Darksaber thing, because I feel like if you had not seen Clone Wars, especially if you are a younger person who is coming into this show, as is technically the target audience for this show, I do feel like you might see the Darksaber and be like, whoa, that's cool. I wonder what that is. I think they're going to explain that later.
Why did Ezra just throw that on the ground? That's the dopest sword you've ever seen and probably ever will see, Ezra. Why did you discard it like that? Like, that didn't make it... Like, it would have made more sense to me if they were like, okay, that's weird and it could be dangerous and we should leave it. And then Sabine, like, is like, no, I need to have this.
Yeah.
But for him to just throw it on the ground, that completely removed my suspension of disbelief.
See, I think that's what removed your suspension of disbelief.
Yes, because it's a dope sword. No one gets rid of that.
See, I think for me, it didn't bother me so much because to Ezra, I think that was so kind of connected to Maul and all the bad stuff that just happened to him. And so for all he knew, because Ezra doesn't know what it is, I think that an argument could be made for the fact that he might think that that has something to do with the Night Sisters as well, who have just caused him all of this all this trouble.
You just used it to destroy the magical altar, though. Like, don't you think that could be... I'm just saying, of all the things they collect in this show, I feel like that definitely should have been high priority on the list.
But I mean, of all the bad decisions Ezra makes, keeping the weapon I found... Mm-hmm. You know, not okay. terrible
right.
on
That's
his sliding scale of what's wrong with you, so.
Yeah, but I do think that, you know, Sabine's reaction, because when, you know, one of the last shots is her, you know, holding the hilt of the Darksaber, looking at it, like, with maybe some recognition.
I was curious about that. I wasn't sure if she recognized it or not. Did you think that when she picked it up that she...
I have no idea.
Just so out of this episode.
I did the homework, and this episode still didn't really have anything for me.
That's fair. It's fair. I hope that she recognized it, because I feel like early Sabine was very feisty and very so much of an individual that it would be nice to see some of those traits come back. We saw a little bit at the end where she was like, you know, I never listened to you before. Like, why should I be here?
That was
pretty great.
It was classic Sabine. And to see her, like, becoming more of a team member over time has been awesome, but... You know, she's still a Mandalorian.
Yeah, and I felt like when she was looking at the hilt of the Darksaber that she did recognize what it was, or that she was processing, like, oh, I think I know what this is.
Yeah.
Because, so basically, way back in the nebulous period known as the Old Republic, there was a battle at, like, one of the
Jedi Temple.
One of the Jedi Temples, exactly. And during that, sort of pre-Visla's...
rise to power?
Yeah, it was like the Visla clan. It was his ancestors.
Yes.
Couldn't come up with the word ancestors. There it is. his ancestors stole the Darksaber.
Yes.
And that's basically the extent of what we know about it.
It's cool,
you
guys.
You know, that's like the third history lesson we've had during this after show to explain this 22-minute episode.
Listen, guys, that's why you're watching this after show. We're here for you.
Truly. What's cool about it is they, like, literally had to raise it, because, like, the Sith Temple we saw earlier in this, or no, sorry, the end of last season.
The end of last season, yeah.
It was buried underground, so they literally had to raise the temple, fought a bunch of Jedi, and then stole the sword, and then the sword was, like, their lead weapon for, like, a hot minute. Like,
yep.
They would assassinate Jedi with the sword.
Yes.
So cool!
Very, very briefly, but yes.
Very cool. And then Pre-Vizsla got it. It was handed down to him, right?
Yeah, it was passed down to him,
yeah.
Exactly.
He goes off, and he's wielding that, and then Maul takes care of that.
Yeah. Yeah, because basically, Maul shows up, and they're like, oh, well, we have a common enemy, so it's not like we're really allies, but, like, we can play nice for a little while.
And they do pretty good.
They do. They do. And you know, Pre Vizsla becomes basically the leader of Mandalore for like 5 minutes.
He gets assassinated so quick.
And then Maul assassinates him, and they basically frame Duchess Satine for his assassination.
Now, give me... Okay, so what I was a little confused on, the mural with the saber seems like a memorial to the Duchess.
Yeah.
But I don't understand why Maul would make that such a Duchess. Like, or
such a thing.
Mural.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if, because he was like, don't touch it, and she knows what it means. And I wasn't sure if he felt equally betrayed at the end of it. Like, he's been through so much from the leg exchange
to,
like, losing his brother to surviving, like, alone in a pit for, like, years and years. And I'm wondering if maybe, like, that's a regrettable thing and that's why he has this shrine? Or
maybe. I'm not...
I think we're ascribing a little too much of conscience. I'm not sure if that's the right word. To Darth Maul. I would be interested to see who built the shrine, but I seriously have my doubts as to whether it was him. Okay. I don't think he's made enough of a heel face turn in order to do something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I don't, he hasn't been camping out here.
No, okay. He hasn't been camping out on Dathomir at all, so...
Someone comes back home and it's like, well, the Darksaber's missing and someone wrecked my altar. Guess that security system I installed wasn't working.
Yeah. I don't know. That's another unanswered question.
Ponder.
Yes.
Please answer these questions in the second half of the season.
Yeah, I feel quite confident that we will. But basically, you know, the sort of inciting incident of the episode is that, I guess, when Darth Maul and Ezra opened the Jedi and Sith holocron and basically, you know, crossed the streams, that that's what it is. That's totally what it is.
Yeah. It is, but it's still funny.
That it somehow affected Ezra in such a way that he and Maul are kind of, like, linked to each other.
Mm-hmm. A force link, I think, was the term I saw used.
It is. Yeah. It's the same link that Vader has with Ahsoka.
Of course.
So to see it, that's why I like these whole, and this is what gets me excited about the show, because the show's been, like, fairly PC, again, compared to Clone Wars. But I'm very excited. I don't, because it's Disney, I don't think they will, but I'll be really excited if Ezra started tampering with the dark side.
Oh, totally.
Like more than just, like, looking at a holocron, but, like,
sure.
Really deep, like, investing,
it's,
switching.
You know, it's really interesting, because I feel like we got more sort of flavor of that last season, and this season we haven't gotten so much of, like...
We got hints of it in this episode, particularly when I was talking to my friend who doesn't watch the show at all.
Right.
And she was like, I don't see Ezra denying that he's... not his apprentice.
Right.
And the moment where Kato, like, has his sword at Maul's neck, and Ezra just, like, he's just like, I don't need it. So what are we doing now? And I'm like, Ezra, yes, please turn evil. Just for, like, half a season even. It would just give me so, like, I like when people go, and especially now that we have the Force Wielder, who's like, I'm neither good nor bad. Like, these are just abstract constructs. Like, I really want to see a more adult, conflicted Ezra. Like, 2-3 years ahead.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, we are 3 seasons and a time skip into this series.
This is
so
true.
We're getting to the point where we can definitely play with that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'd be down, but I'm not sure I'd be down for it in a permanent way.
That would be weird. That would
be really weird.
Unless that's how it ends.
Oh! That makes us seeing the ship from last week in the new Rogue One.
Yes.
Very, what is happening?
Like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think that's part of the reason that I enjoy Ezra as a character is from the point of view that he doesn't feel as all good as our other Jedi protagonists have. You know what I mean? Like, this is more so in the films, in the prequels, than in Clone Wars. But, like, in the prequels, you're like, we all know Anakin's gonna go bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Hayden Christensen's performance is just broadcasting. Like, yeah, I'm definitely going to turn out to be a bad guy.
Yeah. I hate sand.
Yeah, exactly. So that, it's really interesting to see a Jedi hero character be more kind of like in touch with that other side of the Force.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to see that explored more.
Particularly because if you look at the Jedi history, like, it's not always very clear that they're the heroes. Like,
yeah.
If you get a very abstract view of the Jedi, you're like, y'all are kind of imposing your religious will on a bunch of people who aren't sure they want it, and then you go around killing, and you're like, no, it's all good, and now you're a religious army. Like, there's a lot of, like, questioning that can happen, and especially now that they've been kind of decimated, and it deals with themes of, like, trying to learn your history and understand your place, and then at the same time that you have this huge rebellion and war going on, like, there's just so many fun things to explore, and I think Ezra's a such a great character to do it with.
Totally.
Because he's got a good heart.
Yeah, you know? He does. That's the thing, is all of the bad decisions that Ezra makes come from a really good place. I mean, that
for
is...
For the most part.
That's
occasionally,
why...
Occasionally, it's just him being a teenage boy.
Occasionally, yes. Yeah. But, I mean, it's like his decision to constantly trust these people who he can't really trust. And I think that some of that, again, comes from a good place of him being like, no, I know what's right and good for everybody. And also from a place of, I want to prove everybody wrong, either by trusting somebody that nobody else wants to trust and proving that they're wrong and this person is trustworthy, or number two, basically trusting, quote unquote, somebody, but not really. You know,
it just feeds so well into his backstory of having to take care of himself for so long and being independent and then being really good at being independent.
Absolutely. He's Space Aladdin.
Yeah.
He is Space Aladdin. It's just so cute. But then, like, trying to join a team and, you know, understanding what that really means. Like, it's great to me that the show shows children what it's like to be a part of a team and how that can be challenging at times. Even when you want to be there, even when you love the people that you're with, it's really hard to, like, you know, conform, to let go of your power, as we saw him do with Rex earlier. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't know. I hope that Ezra stays on a solid path, but I also really like when he and Kane fight, because I think that their fights are usually the dialogue is really well scripted between the two of them.
Yeah, and I think that Kanan is such an interesting mentor character for Ezra, because as you're saying, Joelle, like, it is that sort of, like, learning your history and whatnot. And Kanan's very much trying to, like, forget about all the bad stuff that happened to him. So
he survived by pretending not to be a Jedi.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, obviously that was a very smart move on his point, from the point of view that he did, in fact, survive. But there is a certain amount of, like, survivor's guilt, I think, that goes along with that. So it's interesting.
I have to say that the Bendu was my favorite part of this episode.
Oh, I adore Bendu.
I love him whenever he comes back and I don't want to see Maul again. Well then, don't turn around. And then they turn back around and he's gone. Like, where did you go?
You're so big. How did you just disappear?
What? The Bendu teleports. I don't even care. I love him so much.
Yeah. More force wielders, please.
Yeah.
New favorite character in this series.
And Tom Baker crushes it.
Tom freaking Baker, man.
I just love that it's Tom Baker. I cannot handle that. It's like... And especially
if you want someone who walks the chaotic neutral side of time and space, you get the longest running doctor in history.
Exactly. Sense. Exactly. The first doctor I ever saw.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
That was such a late...
intro. My dad's British, so.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, yes, and again, that goes back to what we were saying before about the idea of there being, of this series really embracing the sort of gray area of the Force, if you will.
Almost out of necessity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you can shoot, especially in today's time, I think it's really hard to sell, like, the traditional Jedi story.
Yeah.
Like, it works in a nostalgia feel, going back and looking at, like,
sure,
sweet innocent Luke, and you're like, oh, man, he really believes that he's going to do everything good. But
he really does.
No, truly. But I don't think that we want protagonists like that anymore.
Not at all.
But I mean, that was the 70s and 80s. Yeah. That was very much the hero's journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it worked then. And now we're so familiar with those tropes, and they've been just so ground into the dirt that we're like, if you give us another hero's journey story, we won't believe it. We will go insane.
And then
we get episode 7, which is like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm interested now.
Because I think it's kind of comes from the idea that, like, we know people are not that naive, you know?
Yeah. It's not just anymore.
Yeah. In a world that's so connected, and I think it's really interesting that, like, the heroes in Star Wars have come to reflect that as well.
Yeah.
It's smart writing on the part of Lucasfilm, for sure.
Agreed.
But yeah. So basically Ezra and Maul end up going to Dathomir because Maul has this idea that he's going to be able to perform this ritual, and by that ritual, Ezra is going to be able to see what he needs to see, and vice versa.
Yeah.
For not trusting Maul, Ezra does not ask nearly enough questions.
Yep. Yeah.
How does this work? What goes into it? What is it going to do? Is there a cost? It's just like, do the thing. Okay. Now drink the juice. First. Okay, but you have to as well. Okay, fine. By the way, there's a cost, and they're going to try and kill us. What?
Yeah. Never drink the green smoky potion. Like, that just doesn't end well for anyone.
Halloween stuff. Parties.
Ask the questions first.
Ask the questions
first. Don't just tip the bottle back. That is how you end up where you don't know where you are.
I think that's what we've been talking about with Ezra's decisions. And on one hand, there is the narrative side, what needs to happen on the story. And then on the other hand, it's like, how have you not learned better yet?
Especially when you have such great mentors. Like, again, we can go back to the beginning of the season with Rex when, like, dude, you're in a battlefield with, like, one of the best soldiers maybe ever in the history of this universe. Like, listen. Like, I'm a good soldier. No, you're not.
Yeah.
No, you're not. And to some degree, like, okay, I get it. Ezra is young and you make stupid mistakes.
Sure, sure.
And I like the idea of humans making the same mistakes over and over again because, you know, that's how
that's
we
what people
are.
Do. Yeah.
That is how we are. But I feel like he needs to make them in more dynamic ways. They just need to happen in different ways because the show, again, become a little bit predictable. And when you're watching, you're just like, Ezra's not going to listen, is he? Nope. Bye. There you go. Messing up everybody's situation. Ezra, come back. Come back to the fold. Listen to you. Like, your mentors are so great. Like, I would like to see him listen, have a, like, a, the, having listened, make a reaction, and that reaction be a flaw. Like, whatever happens is negative. And he's like, oh, no, I got to do it my way again. Like, I'd like to see him try to
experiment with not his way.
Thank you for the words.
Yes. But again, I mean, and I think that this is going to sound like it's coming out of left field, but there are a lot of people that have a very similar sort of criticism of the series Legend of Korra, where they feel like Korra just keeps making the exact same mistakes over and over and over again. And for me, having been a teenage girl, I'm like, nope, I get it. I'm that stubborn. Like, I just relate to that character so much. And I think I relate to Ezra a little bit in that regard as well. I'm older now, so I'm more receptive to, like, oh, wait, if I try things the exact same way every single time, it's not going to work out. But I get, like, just from Ezra being a stubborn teenager, why it's written that way. I think that, yes, they do at this point need to start showing Ezra, like, experimenting with some other sort of ways of solving problems. And at least in this episode, to be fair, he absolutely solved the issue that he had caused.
Yes, he was forced into a corner, did have to try to figure out what to do, and was pretty clever about his ways of solving the problem. So, highlights, again, it's a very C episode for me. Like, a lot of good strengths, a lot of just, why? Like, why did you not tell us about the witches?
Well, and yeah, there was a lot of missing context, which I think I've beaten to the dirt at this point, and a lot of handing Ezra the idiot ball to hold for a little while. And it's like, oh, okay, you're the only person left to solve problems. We'll just take the idiot ball back, and now you can be smart again. Mm. Like, quit handing Ezra the idiot ball.
But listen, guys.
He's learned.
We got a great moment where we got to see AP5, so I'm fine with
that. Yes! AP5 is glorious. Why am I the last one? Like, I identify with AP5 the most. Like, why am I the last one to know the shipping order? Like, I'm the bot that does the things, and you're just changing. Like, oh, man, I really hope we get more of it. I would like to see, again, going over to Clone Wars, we had a lot of episodes that were just R2-D2, C-3PO related, going on their own adventures. And I would love to see Chopper and AP5 just out there in the world doing their own thing.
Oh, 100%. My God. I need it in my life. We had one episode like that, and, like, I'm going to need about six more
yes,
of those.
Please.
And I love same quality level. Just do it. Yeah. Just do it. Just go.
And Sabine's comment that he and Chopper came from, like, the same assembly line. Amazing.
Yes.
Because they are. They are, like, the most opposite of R2-D2 and C-3PO that you can possibly get while also being an astromech and a protocol droid. So
I really enjoy their banter and their chemistry. Like,
yes.
Chopper just degrading people all the time is so, it's just, it's always spot on and perfect. And I'm really appreciative of the fact that droids continue to be a key element to, like, all
absolutely,
the Star Wars
absolutely.
Well, Chopper is the angry semi-feral cat that has reluctantly adopted this family, but only really likes one or two of them.
Yes.
And AP5 is the moping basset hound who is, he'll do his best, but at this point he's just along for the ride.
Oh my God. That was perfection. That was, can someone draw that for me? Like, I want to see them as a cat dog. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, tell me I'm wrong. That's
absolutely not. I feel like AP5 I need more of. I thought that that was maybe a character that was going to get a little bit more integrated.
We
especially, especially because he was a new character that was introduced for Rebels. Like, I enjoy sort of the sparse-ish use of Captain Rex. Like, I love Captain Rex, and I love that he gets episodes where he's in focus, but he's not necessarily always a key player, because again, that's a big Clone Wars reference.
Yeah.
So I think that they use him really well. I thought they used Ahsoka really well last season.
So well.
Yeah. Also, she's definitely not dead.
She cannot be dead.
Yeah, no body, no death. That's what I'm saying.
True rules.
But yeah.
Who had just a really good comment? AP5 and Chopper. Oh, nope. Somebody said the AP5 came from the same factory Toonami Tom came from. Jack Harkness. And I agree wholeheartedly. That's amazing.
Yeah.
If you guys don't watch
We all kind of went there. Like, oh, it's Tom. Where's Steve Bloom voicing other people?
Including the random dude that Ezra, like, hallucinated was Darth Maul, who
that
like,
poor guy.
Tries to beat up.
That poor guy. Oh, my God. You just feel so bad for all of these normal people who are part of this rebellion and, you know, watching everyone in the colorful clothes and no uniforms go off and do things and be like, well, I'm just going to keep sweeping the floor.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
This is my life. This to keep the floor clean.
I feel like a lot of people are probably really glad they're not a part of the rebellion. Like, I don't need the Empire coming in here every 2 seconds, blowing people up on bikes for no good reason. Like, this is just a lot of drama, and I prefer to sweep my floor over here where it's safe.
Well, and these are people who are part of the rebellion. They're on the base. But it's just like, I'm just custodial staff, you guys. I load the ships, I sweep the floor, I polish the droids.
I live a long time.
For the most part,
yeah. Yes. Yeah, not getting involved is probably the most likely recipe for success in terms of living a long life. Though, at the same time, a lot of innocent bystanders get killed.
This is very true.
If that's a gamble you want to take, you can, but like...
It did not help the younglings.
It did not. Oh, boy, it did not. Yeah.
Well, that was dark.
Yep. Ah, yes. Hello. I love dark humor.
So let's talk, we live there.
Let's talk a little bit more about Darth Maul, because obviously he was a big sort of focus of this episode. Did you guys, like, have any sort of, like, emotional response
Maul?
To him?
Where was Maul? Like, it was just, he felt like a plot point. Like, okay, we need to get Ezra here, we need to learn about Obi-Wan. Mm-hmm. And then he's got to get out of there, and they're racing against each other, which is a really cool setup. Don't get me wrong. I'm excited to see them race to Obi-Wan. That's going to be really cool. But
I conveniently knew where your base was. That's the one memory that I got from you that was helpful. Like, on one hand, okay. On the other hand, really.
Roll my eyes. But he's not even the I need the intimidating mess, or I need the falling apart, my head's not fully here guy. And he just seemed like a person here, and it was very strange.
He'd come down a little bit from everyone's crazy uncle, and now he was just kind of like, I'm here.
And I'm on a mission.
Okay.
And I get that he's more
He went back
now.
To crazy uncle at the end.
Yeah.
He did.
I liked that so much more. Crazy Uncle Maul is my favorite iteration of Maul.
It's the only Maul we should ever get. I liked I liked his intro. I liked the kind of like, he's here. And he's here.
Oh, the visions of Maul.
The hallucination Maul.
And then that close-up with that low-angle shot, I was like, yes, this is what I can. And I got me really excited for the whole episode. And then I'm like, I needed that Maul throughout the whole storyline.
But do you think that some of that is potentially that he is, like, sharing in some of Ezra's memories in a way?
Like,
you know
Ezra
what
is bringing him down to sanity?
Maybe. I don't know.
If they prove that works, then I'm down.
Dang. I think that the point of this episode was to try to sever that connection or at least lessen
it. Right.
Because that's what the magic will allow us to do, whatever. And I'm like, okay, but is it also going to fix the hallucinations? Like, what's left after this? What? We didn't get a lot of explanation for anything. It was a hand-wavy green magic ritual that allowed us to do stuff.
Also, I'm not sure I trust Maul to tell the truth, and I'm not 100% sure that the connection has been severed. I really feel like they're going to keep harping on this potential apprentice line, and I hope they do.
Yeah. No, I like the potential apprentice line, and so, you know, there was a moment in this episode when they have sort of the joint vision of Obi-Wan, mm-hmm. where Maul says to him, like, no, like, we can leave together, we can do this together, we can forge our own path, and, like, to me, I believed him. Like, I believe that on some level, Maul does really mean that.
Maul has only ever wanted a family.
Yes.
Like, that he's literally been searching his entire life just to feel connected to a thing. And every time he gets close, they die. Usually in terrible, tremendously awful ways.
Yes.
And then he leaves a whole bunch of bodies behind him. And it's just like I do believe it. And then he finds Ezra, and Ezra's powerful, and he can, like, control animals, and he's very cool. Like, I totally believe that he wants to do that. And I was a little rooting for Ezra, like, go. Just explore. You can save them later.
Oh,
I knew it wasn't going to happen. I knew it was never going to happen. But in my heart, I was like, please.
Well, there was no way he was going to persuade him at that point because world's worst timing. Oh, well, your friends are possessed. We should just leave them there and you should go with me.
Right. Yeah, that's a great sell.
What a failure persuasion roll there, buddy.
Maul didn't really think it through.
No, you don't say.
But I will say that, like, it is, I think that the sort of Ezra Maul storyline makes sense in a lot of ways from the point of view that Ezra also really just wants a family.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. And I think it would have been a strong storytelling point, especially at this point in the season, to have Ezra go with Maul mm-hmm. and be like, I can't save, like, after trying, of course, can't save them, and he just, like, takes off, like, it would be like, oh my god, what? Oh my god. And then it would require, oh my goodness, captain of the ship. Why? Name
Hera?
Hera. It would require Hera and them to come back and save them. And I just feel like that would be a really cool, like, point to leave off on the season, to be like, what is even happening? And, like, again, I know, like, because he's the Aladdin, and he's cute and cuddly, like, they're not going to go that direction with him, but I just desire so much a dark version of this show, because I like darkness in Star Wars, like...
You want the dark AU fan fiction.
And I will find it.
I'm sure it exists.
I'm positive it already exists.
Recommendations. I'm
sure
it exists.
Please do, guys. Please do. But you know, I want Ezra to make either a mistake that counts or to start making different kinds of mistakes.
That's a really good way to put it. He definitely made mistakes that counted in the season premiere.
Yes.
And we saw that happen, like actual stakes. You said that Ezra's parallels with Maul was that he wanted a family. Difference is, Ezra has a family now. He found his family.
Exactly.
So something has to happen to his family, with his family, something, in order to get him to willingly go with Maul.
No, absolutely. No, and
Maul's still just, I am really desperate.
And I totally agree with you, and I almost feel like in some ways, you know, the end of this episode may have implied, and I know there was some comments about it in the chat as well, that Maul might be realizing he's gotta give up on Ezra, because effectively, in the end of this episode, when he doesn't run off with Maul and he goes back to save Sabine and Kanan, he is choosing that family over the family, quote unquote, he could have with Maul. So,
you know, the guy that hosed him twice and tried to kill the people he cares about? Yeah, that one. It's a wonder that people don't like him as a person.
Yeah.
Just that sparkling personality.
Listen, Maul has had a rough life. He doesn't really have the best of social skills.
He does not.
But that's not going to stop me from making fun of it. Let's be completely real.
I do love Sam Witwer as Dark Maul, though. I
mean, oh, great. Yeah. Great performance.
Yeah.
Great. It's very theatrical.
I feel like it's unmasking a Scream villain. Once the Ghostface mask comes off and they just start chewing the scenery, that's crazy Uncle Maul, and that's what I love.
Yeah.
That just makes me really happy.
Yeah. And I think now, with the introduction of the idea that it sounds like we're going to be seeing Obi-Wan.
Which is very exciting.
Which I'm super jazzed about. That we might see a little more of that crazy Maul, because he's going to be that much closer to his own past trauma.
At that point, it acts crazy.
Yeah.
Ooh, that confrontation is going to be so good.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that we get more, like, Qui-Gon Jinn Maul, like, level fights.
Yes.
Like, I want to see Old Man Kenobi, like, break out the saber and fight Maul. Like, hell yes. And I actually wouldn't mind if, like... Well, nothing's really canon anymore. We can adjust a lot, but I don't know if Maul has a death story. Like, I don't know if his story has a solid ending in any of the literature.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But it would be cool if they gave him a good death here.
Like,
I love Maul, and I'd be sad to see him go, but at the same time, I wouldn't mind if he was put out of his misery.
No, this is a character.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
I agree. I think it's
a character
that... He
lived for too long, honey.
Yeah, he has to die. Eventually.
Yeah. Once the robotic legs came on, and again, that's my favorite iteration of Maul, but once robotic spider legs happened, I've been rooting for him to die since. I'm like, you don't have to do this anymore. This is so much. But yeah, I don't know. I'm curious also, like, I'm sure they'll bring back the original voice actor for Obi-Wan.
James Arnold Taylor?
Yes. Yep.
And I'll be interested.
James is lovely.
I'll be interested to see how he ages.
Well, I've heard James Arnold Taylor do the Alec Guinness Obi-Wan voice, and it sounds really good, so... Yeah.
Well, they originally got him to do some Obi-Wan lines in Force Awakens when they're having that Force flashback, but then they went back into New Hope and pulled...
Yeah.
lines and did some fun voice editing. So he's still in the credits, but he got taken out of the actual movie.
I had no clue that that was a thing. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, though a lot
he did the thing.
A lot of the actors who worked on Clone Wars did a lot of the ADR for the scene, the marketplace scene in Jakku.
Ah, that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yep. So, yeah. But I am very excited at the prospect of Obi-Wan coming back, because I think that's a character who you can have in Rebels without
screwing with the timeline.
Yeah, exactly, without screwing with the timeline. It's that whole idea of, like, I don't really want to see them interact with Luke, no. Because that wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But Obi-Wan, and especially because, and you know, something that I would love to see explored in the films or in a Netflix series or something is, like, I want to see what was going on with Obi-Wan on Tatooine.
Yes. Yes,
I feel like that would be the world's most boring Netflix series. Like, he'd be sitting there and he'd go to the market and get some milk and bring
you
it back.
Old man Kenobi?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yes. I would be interested.
Read the holographic newspaper.
Again, in my alternate universe fan thing, like, Ahsoka escapes to Obi-Wan and, like, they're chilling for a bit. Like, I want to see those two together, especially after the way she walks off on Clone Wars. But you guys, sorry if you guys don't watch Clone Wars. I'm sorry to bring it up so much. I just really adore this show. But
you don't say.
I really do. So true. But her walk off into the desert is so kind of, like, iconic and, like, this great climactic cinematic scene. And I hope that if we get a reunion, if we're lucky enough, that the reunion is just as big and just as, like, fun and kind
of... Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that it would be a one-off kind of episode. It's not going to be, like, a long series of Obi-Wan stuff. I wouldn't want it to be.
Yeah, no. No, he doesn't need to take over, and he's got to stay there. Like, that's where you live now. Yeah. So, totally.
I'm here now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same way that you don't want to overuse Darth Vader.
Yes, no, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah.
And like I said, I think Vader is scarier in Rebels than he was to me in any of the films.
That's so funny.
That is 1,000% true. It is 1,000% true.
I'm glad, because everyone else says, what are you talking about? He was terrifying in the films. And I'm like, no, 8-year-old Katie was not afraid of Darth Vader.
I have no frame of reference, because I was like 3 when I saw New Hope.
Also, we talked about this last week. I was also very young the first time I saw Vader. But I will agree, like, he appears like 8 feet tall in this show. And, like, the way they choose to shoot him is much more terrifying than the way he's been shot in, like, definitely not in the prequels, but even, I would say all the way up until Return of the Jedi, like, he's kind of there, and he seems like the same height as everybody else, and he's kind of intimidating, but not really. Yeah.
And he shows up, and he kills a guy, and he chokes, and I was like, okay, this, you have your standard bad guy. And when he shows up here at the beginning of season 2, we know what Kanan and Ezra are capable of. We know what our ghost crew is capable of. And he absolutely wipes the floor with them.
Droids
it's just
them.
Like,
why can no one win here? Oh my God. It's
like,
so cool.
Okay, now I'm terrified.
This is the Vader I need, like, for every property here on out. Like, please give me a Vader this terrifying.
This Vader makes the original trilogy retroactively scary.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not saying that I don't think Vader is incredibly scary in Rebels. I absolutely do. I just remember being scared of Darth Vader as a very small child.
No, I'm saying I find him scarier in Rebels, and people have been like, what? No. No, he was scarier in the original movies.
Oh, no, I don't think he's scarier in the original movies. I just think he's terrifying all around, and that's my story.
There you go.
Yes. I want to take a second to talk to you guys a little bit more about iTunes. iTunes is a great place to listen to this podcast. It's a great place to give us your feedback, and when you do, we give you guys a shout-out on the show. So, as I say, we have 3 new iTunes reviews this week. We have Rebel Women from Jedi James 32. Smart, intelligent, and well-informed banter between the hosts. Very up-to-date fix for the latest on new episodes of Star Wars Rebels. 5 stars. Thank you so much. We have Thrallship by Chris in DC United. 5 stars again. I give the Maul and Thrawn kiss 5 stars. Just kidding. But how fantastic would that be? That's a solution right there.
Alternate universe fan fictions, please, guys.
Go for it.
Great show, all. Been listening for a long time. Keep up the great work. And then the last one is entitled Great Podcast for Rebels Fans. And the username is slightly inappropriate, so I'm not going to say it on the air.
You know who you are.
You know who you are. And despite the name, we adore you. Or maybe because of the name. I don't know. It says, this podcast is great. I've been listening since season one of Rebels, and the consistency of good quality content and insight is awesome. It's great to hear the episodes from you guys' perspective. I've even gotten my sisters to both start listening to your podcast. They love it, especially getting women's point of view and letting their voices be heard. You guys bring such energy and enjoyment to every episode. Definitely worth a follow and listen. Support this podcast and keep them going. And that's one of the best ways you can support us is to listen to us on iTunes and leave us reviews and let our producers know that you like this show and you like listening to us talk about Star Wars, Rebels, and otherwise.
Oh, you're so sweet.
If you are in an iTunes store that is not the American iTunes store, please take a screen cap of your review and put it in the hashtag. Same as if you are using the podcast feature on Google Music. We have a bit more trouble tracking those down, but we definitely still want to see them and we definitely still want to give you a shout out.
Absolutely.
So please do the thing.
Yes, absolutely. So, before we roll into some predictions officially to wrap this up here, you, Joelle, got a chance to see Rogue One.
I saw it twice.
Wow.
Yes, I know.
And you didn't take me.
This is literally a reaction to finding out I went twice. They're like, so you had another ticket. I'm so sorry. Took my roommate and my friend of, like, 8 years.
I know, I'm joking.
No, no, no.
It's okay, my friend Erica took my mom.
I think I'm, like, 50th on your list here.
I feel so bad. I won't take everybody.
Well, without spoiling anything, what were your impressions?
Oh, boy, guys. I did write a review. There are the mildest of spoilers. And when I say very mild, I mean, like... Like super mild.
Right.
I don't know how to...
Darth Vader is in this movie.
Exactly that level. And the one spoiler that might be a little bit above that is very clearly marked. It's on blackgirlnerds.com. You can go check it out. What can I say about this movie? One, it is fully a standalone film, which I know you guys have heard, but you can believe it now. Like, it's really just this movie. Two, so cool. Three, great cameos. Like, just stunning, wonderful cameos. If you're a fan of Donnie Yen, you might have seen him in It Man and a bunch of other movies. Oh my god, he's the greatest Jedi ever. He's so, so cool. I kind of wish the movie was just about him. Guys, you might have a new favorite robot after the end of this.
That's
movie.
What I've been hearing.
I hear Alan Tudyk is quite good.
He is the comedic relief of the film and charming and just funny.
Jack Harkness speaks my mind. Were there boffins?
Were there boffins? Help me out, guys.
Well, because a lot of boffins died to get these get the plans. Death Star plans.
Copy.
That's like the one joke people have been making.
So. This is over my Star Wars head. And finally, I mentioned the ending fight sequence. Okay, there's two extra things, actually. Fight scenes on the beach, which will remind you of every movie you've seen about Normandy and D-Day. So good. Also, camo for the, what are they calling them? Short troopers.
Yes, the short troopers.
Short troopers is my new favorite terminology. Is really great. And finally, I'll say when Vader shows up, it's just as you said earlier. You don't want to use Vader too much, and he should be terrifying. Guys.
They nail it.
I only cried at one part in the movie, and it's the Vader fight. And I cried so hard. I was like, this is everything I wanted. definitely don't miss it. Like, you guys are here, so I'm sure you're going to go see it anyway. But see it sooner rather than later. Buy, like, 3 or 4 tickets. I already have my ticket for Thursday when it comes out. I'm so excited.
Yeah. We're booking it out of the Ruby After Show to go see. We have reserved seats. Yep. We're going up to City Walk.
Nice.
I already know what I'm getting at the concession stand. Like, we get this plan.
You got a plan.
Oh, I am in it to win it.
I am very excited to see it myself, and all the reviews I've been hearing is basically that, like, there's a couple of pacing issues, but other than that, it's just a fantastic film and really a great standalone.
Well, and the greatest thing about the movie is that the pacing issues happen in the first quarter.
Perfect.
Okay.
Great.
You're like, wow, well, it feels a little laborious, and then you're like, oh, here we go. Okay, we're in.
Yes.
It's like climbing a roller coaster, and then you hit the first drop, and it's like, oh, here we go.
I'm in this now. I'm ready.
Yes. And I have also heard that if you are... a, you know, Star Wars fan on, like, a deeper sort of level, that there's a lot of, like, very cool tie-ins that will blow your mind.
Cameos, like, the cameos have the audience losing their mind. Like, it was really cool to go to the premiere because there are a lot of, like, Stormtrooper, Mandalorian, like, fan cosplayer guys there.
Oh, yeah.
And so to hear their reaction to different people, it was just... it was precious. People, like, literally
went to the
seats.
Premiere, too.
Yeah, and I went to the world premiere, and I ended the after party, and if you go to my Instagram, which is at Joelle_Monique, you can see all the photos from that night. That's pretty cool.
How big is your purse, and can I fit in it?
Next next time. There's one every year.
Amazing. Exactly. No, my goal is 100% to get invited next year to have a fabulous dress, and it's going to be amazing. It's definitely going to happen, guys. Hashtag life goals. Anyway, moving into some quick predictions
TV predictions.
Move into the second half of the season. Obviously, Obi-Wan's going to be a factor. Exciting. Or I mean, I guess maybe not obviously, but
supposedly James Arnold Taylor tweeted that he didn't do any VO for this, that Obi-Wan's not going to be in this season.
No.
So, question mark, we'll see. I'm going on hearsay from chat. I would need to see the tweets in question myself.
Yes.
The bravest thing they could do right now is to make it a different planet and a different person. I would lose my absolute mind. He says Obi-Wan, if they go there and it's like, nope, not Obi-Wan, you're on the wrong planet with two stones, I'd be like, oh my god, this is great. I'm so excited, because when it happened, I was like, oh, I feel like I know what's happening. But that would be exciting. That would be really thrilling.
That would be really
interesting.
It's just some other guy. Yeah. There is also this, like, tiny little part of me, though, that's like, but what if they got Ewan McGregor to do the voice?
I would be down on the floor.
You know?
I mean, they've got Boyega, so, I mean, maybe?
Maybe. You know, I don't think that's the case, but, like, there's a little part of my brain that's like, that is a possibility. But more likely it's that James Arnold Taylor is trying to throw everybody off. Because, you know, especially with animated series, it's like you record stuff
so far in advance.
And you're under a lot of non-disclosure agreements and things. So I feel like even at this point, you can't say for sure that we're going to see Obi-Wan. But I do think that that is the case. I agree with you. I would love it if it turned out to not be that, but I would also still love it if it turned out to be that.
I want to see Obi-Wan.
Because I love Obi-Wan Kenobi as a character.
But I'd rather have a surprise Obi-Wan and a twist here.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, oh, hey, Obi-Wan, like
a lot. No, I agree. I think it would be way more fun if they showed up and it was not Obi-Wan that they found, but they were still actually looking for Obi-Wan, but he kind of surprised them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I need another face-off between Maul and Obi-Wan. And
for
I think that,
sure.
And I feel and I think that Obi-Wan needs to be the one to kill Maul for forever.
Yes.
That's what I'm just saying.
Yes.
Yep. But aside from that,
I'm down for all of that. I'd like to mirror all of your predictions and sit here and just go, yes.
Perfect.
Stamp it.
Aside from that, any other sort of... Obviously, we're going to get more Thrawn-ness.
Bring back Ahsoka. That's it.
Yeah,
that's all I
exactly.
got.
Yeah. I want more Thrawn and to bring back Ahsoka, and then I will be very, very happy with the remainder of season 3 of Star Wars Rebels.
I need another touch of Vader in there somewhere.
Yes.
Just a little sprinkle.
Yep. I think that'll happen down the line.
Yeah.
Season finale, please.
Season finale territory once again.
Yep, exactly. That's a good use of Vader, is season finales all around. All right, so with that being said, guys, it looks like Star Wars Rebels is coming back on January 7th, so it actually will not be that long until we are back again. We don't know for sure that this will definitely be our time slot coming into next year, so, you know, stick around, check our social media for updates on when exactly we will be returning. So, Katie, where can people follow you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and YouTube at Kiaxe. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. I am also on Snapchat at Kia Prime, the Z Nation season finale, because it's got a real short season. We are doing the thing. The after show is going to be Monday at 7 p.m. We alternate every other week for Ruby. We do have a Ruby show this week. That is tomorrow, Thursday at 7 p.m. We're not going on break for Christmas for that. It will continue to be every other week. And everything else I do is on hiatus. Voltron's coming back next year. January 20th is when the season drops. We will keep you updated as to when that panel will be.
Hey guys, I'm Joel Monique. You can find me everywhere on the internet at Joel Monique, and every week at Black Girl Nerds. As I said previously, please go to blackgirlnerds.com and check my review of Star Wars. And when you see it, come back and like talk to me about it. I'm dying to tell people everything, and obviously I'm not going to do that. So, you know, bring your thoughts in after you've seen the movie. I'd also encourage you to come to Book Circle Online tomorrow, where we're going to be talking comics, as we do every Wednesday at 6 o'clock. And then join me at 9 for, what the hell show do I do?
You do a show at 9. Everyone should watch it.
And that show, Corporation AfterBuzz. You're going to see it. It's great.
And I'm Emma Fife. I can be found all over the internet at my name, Emma Fife, E-M-M-A-F-Y-F-F-E. Thank you so much to everybody who checked out the all Star Wars edition of Movie Fights. It was a ton of fun. Also, those of you who checked out my Hot Pepper Gaming review of Sailor Moon Drops, that was also a great time. Probably more of a great time for you than for me, who was in a lot of pain. Stick around right now. Hop on over to Popcorn Talk. I'm going to be appearing on Otaku Movie Anatomy talking about the Pretty Guardian Sailor Moon wedding special. It's literally called We're Getting Married, so that'll be a lot of fun. So that's coming up at 7 o'clock, so basically right now, so I need to get out of here. And then also starting on December 19th, there's a bunch of wonderful people here at AfterBuzz TV are going to be reviewing the much-applauded anime series Yuri on Ice. We'll be covering episodes 1 and 2 on December 19th at 7 o'clock p.m., and I am so excited. Thank you so much, you guys, for tuning in for this whole first half of the season. Again, we'll keep you guys updated on when exactly we will be back, what time, etc., etc., and so forth. In the meantime, use that hashtag ABTVRebels if you want to talk about the show with us on Twitter, and we will see you guys again in the second half of this season.
Bye!
Bye!
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
May the Force be with you.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.